Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bridging the Gap with Chief Barnes. I'm your host, Chief Sean Barnes of the Madison Police Department. The purpose of this podcast is to bring perspective to the field of policing, which is often a black box to many communities. Our department aims to bridge the gap between the police and the community we serve in order to increase trust and legitimacy in the Madison Police Department. We will be conducting interviews with stakeholders and decision makers regarding a variety of topics which affect public safety here in Madison. We hope you enjoy. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bridging the Gap with Chief Barnes. I'm your host, Chief Barnes of the Madison Police Department. We have a very, very special episode for you today, a topic that I think should be discussed more and more in every community in America. And certainly this is a topic that I think the Madison Police Department has really been on the forefront of doing some really great things, and that is mental health. And so before we begin, let me say that we're going to get into some topics. We're going to talk about some things and best practices that we do and some things that I think if a community member is listening to this, it may help you if you're dealing with that issue. I'll also say if we talk about something today and it gives you pause or it causes you some type of heartburn, we're going to tell you where to go to get some help from that. But to do that, I want to introduce my very, very special guest. It's Jared Prado, who commands our mental health unit here at the Madison Police Department, and Sarah Henriksen, who is a clinical team manager with Journey Mental Health. How you guys doing?
Good.
Happy to be here.
Just good and happy. All right. I like that. Let's start with you, Sergeant Prado. How did you find policing and how did you find mental health as one of your areas of specialty? Because I'm sure you do a lot more than just that.
Sure. I'm going to give you the Cliff Notes version, which is I went to UW-Platteville as an undergrad. Before that, I grew up in the city of Madison on the east side. After Platteville, I applied to the police department as a young 21-year-old. I ended up getting hired and took on the night shift. And after a little bit more school, I came back and I started with the mental health unit in July of last year.
Absolutely. Great. And thanks for being here. You know, 21, I don't know if I was ready. I was not ready at 21. So thank you for your service and thank you for being here with us today. I know you're very busy.
You bet.
And Sarah, can I call you Sarah?
Yes, of course.
All right, Sarah, tell me, who grows up and says, you know, I want to work in the field of mental health and be a manager?
Well, I definitely did not set out to be a manager, but I was I graduated with a master's degree in social work in 2000 with the plan of becoming a clinic-based therapist who would, you know, kind of see people for in-office therapy appointments. And at that time, you couldn't get that kind of work if you didn't have your license yet. And so I was hired by Journey Mental Health as a crisis worker, which I might not have thought would be a good fit with my personality because I kind of like things to be predictable and orderly, and that is not the nature of crisis work.
Or police work.
Exactly. But I found that I really took to it, and almost 23 years later, I'm still in the field of doing crisis intervention services. And I started out embedded with the Madison Police Department as a Journey crisis worker in 2016, joining the mental health unit. And at that time, we were kind of just really exploring what can this look like? How can we enhance the partnership that already exists between Madison Police Department and Journey? And it really kind of took off from there, and we now have multiple crisis workers embedded with the Madison Police Department, the Dane County Sheriff, and the CARES team, which I know we're going to talk about later. And so that's how I ended up becoming a manager, because with the experience that I had, it was just kind of a natural fit for me to oversee those partnerships.
Absolutely. And we're so happy to have a partnership with Journey Mental Health and to have you on board and to help us with this. You know, when I think about mental health, so I've been in policing for over two decades. That's my way of saying I'm old. But when I first started out, you know, we dealt with people who had mental health challenges. And I want to start just by saying that people with mental health challenges are more likely to be victims than they are assailants. And I think that's important as we lay the groundwork for this particular conversation. But I remember, and Sarge, you can back me up on this, you know, days where early on we went to mental health calls and we knew the person, you know, was suffering with something. They may have caused a disturbance. They may have hurt someone. They may have damaged some property. And the answer was to take them to jail. We had a back when I first started, a very almost famous person in the community with mental health issues, and he was huge, and it was always like, okay, you got to take this guy to jail, which means you had to fight him, which means you had to get him in jail, and then he would not go to court, and you would just start all over again. But we don't do that now, and I'm glad we don't. We've learned, we've evolved, and so I just want to ask you, like, how do we get here, and what do we do now that's so different than what we did 20-plus years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. And diversion is one of our core values as a unit, as the mental health unit, and I think we may not be unique in having that core value amongst other units across the country, but I think how we got to where we are is a bit unique. As Sarah mentioned, she was our first embedded crisis worker back in 2016, but going back to 2004, we actually started our liaison program. So there were patrol officers that were seeing that there was a need for them to connect with service providers and to meet and to problem solve and figure out how could we connect people to the right resources when they were the ones as patrol officers seeing them on a daily basis. And what that grew into was us being recognized as a national learning site, and then eventually to us having our own unit of full-time officers. And I'm proud to say today we have 6 mental health officers assigned in every district of our city, and we have the capacity for 3 crisis workers now. We're working together. We can address a lot more of the things before the crisis occurs, after the crisis occurs, and we can even assist to smooth things out during a crisis. And I think the diversion piece is owing to our recognition that mental illness isn't a crime. And right. So sometimes we see behavior that is dangerous and also criminal. If we have the chance to get somebody hospitalization, that's going to be our first choice every time.
Absolutely. And Sarah, did the mental health experts reach out to the police department in the beginning, or did the police department reach out to you? Like, how did you get involved with actually being, you know, in the police department? Of course, I've seen you. I mean, you can go and come as you please. Like, how did that happen? Because I will tell you, that is not normal in policing. I think one of the problems with policing is that for years we were isolated from everyone. You know, we have all the answers, and you know, we can do it by ourselves, and we know that's really not the best way to do it now. So how did that partnership come about?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of elements to that. One is that under our state statutes, Chapter 51, which covers mental health treatment, we are required to partner in the process of detaining people for involuntary treatment, meaning that neither of us can do it without the other. A law enforcement officer has to place a person into protective custody because we are suspending their civil rights and detaining them against their will. But a crisis worker in any county in Wisconsin, the county-appointed program, has to do an assessment to determine that inpatient psychiatric care is the least restrictive level of care needed to address the person's mental illness and unsafe behavior. And so by law, we've had to partner on this for many years. And I think there's always been, for as long as I've been around, which like you, we're just getting better with age. We're not old,
right?
But I've been around a long time, and there's always been, I think, a partnership in that respect. But what I've seen since we have really developed this enhanced partnership is the explosion of collaboration that we see. Is that when we work side by side with each other, when we share space with each other, when we work on these cases together day in and day out instead of just calling each other when the crisis erupts, we learn a lot more from each other about each other's systems, about the parameters and the different SOPs for police or ethical guidelines or clinical parameters for mental health professionals. We understand each other's systems better, and that only enhances our ability to collaborate effectively to meet people's needs.
Yeah, I like that. And I like how you said when we work together, when we collaborate. So you mentioned this concept of emergency detentions. And so, you know, I'm sure that there's someone listening to this who may have been through this process or someone who may have to go through this process. We're talking about the loved ones of people. And so either one of you can jump in here. Hopefully you will add your perspective. But what should someone, a loved one, expect if they have to call 911? They have to call 911 and say, you know, I'm worried about my family member. They haven't slept in 3 days. They haven't had anything to eat. They haven't bathed. They are making threats. I think they may hurt themselves or someone else. And I can imagine that this is something that, you know, a last resort, right? Because we all love our loved ones. When someone picks up that phone and they call 911, what should they expect, Sarge?
Yeah, it's a good question. I guess just starting with that 911 call. Somebody calls 911 or they call non-emergency and they're connected to that dispatcher, that communicator. That is somebody that isn't a police officer. That's kind of a big misconception I'd find when I do outreach in schools is it isn't an officer answering the phone. It is a civilian employee of the county. And when they're answering that phone call, they're going to be asking some questions. Some of those are to screen to try to figure out what is the appropriate response going to be, and also what are the details that we can give to our officer to empower them to make the right decisions and respond appropriately. And some of those questions, and I'll end up batting it over to Sarah for this, but it might be appropriate for CARES to come out to the call if it's an, even if it's an active crisis, if it's not dangerous, involving weapons, not alleged crimes occurring. And when officers are getting that initial information, if they're the ones to respond, what they can expect are highly trained officers who are great at communication. We hire people that are remarkable people to begin with, and then we give them a lot of training on top of that. And they also are very resourceful. They know who to call. They know that we have this really close collaboration with Journey Mental Health, and that on mental health related calls, we're going to be consulting with them because they are the professionals.
Absolutely. I'm going to circle back to the training question because I know community members, they want to know if we're prepared. And to me, that's what training does. So I'm going to circle back to that. I'm going to turn it over to Sarah. So what should someone expect if they indeed have to make that call?
So, you know, I think Sergeant Prado kind of outlined how calls are screened, and so maybe I'll kind of pivot to talking about if it is a call that's appropriate for a CARES response. And for listeners who are not familiar with CARES, that stands for Community Alternative Response Emergency Services. This is a relatively new initiative. We're about a year and a half since we launched. It's a partnership between the Madison Fire Department and Journey Mental Health, where it essentially adds to the continuum of emergency responses that can be dispatched to a call. So whereas we've always just had police and fire and EMS, now we have CARES. So if there is a behavioral health crisis, as Sergeant Prado said, that does not involve weapons or violent behavior or things like that that might require a law enforcement response, the CARES team can be dispatched. And these teams consist of a pair, a community paramedic from the fire department and a crisis worker from Journey, who come out in civilian clothes in a fire department vehicle with the goal of responding to people who are in crisis, de-escalating as needed, assessing the situation, determining what the person needs, whether it could be something as simple as someone to just listen to them and help them to kind of ground themselves and calm down determine how to kind of resolve the feelings that they're having at that time. It could be connecting them to other resources. It could be transporting them to treatment facilities. And all of these things are things that don't and shouldn't require law enforcement to do. And so where communities have been overly reliant on law enforcement to fill this kind of, you know, social work type role for decades, the city is really recognizing that there's a better way to do things. And I often kind of phrase it in the way that, you know, you can have the best trained officer, you can have a mental health officer, somebody who really understands these issues. When you bring a uniformed armed law enforcement officer into someone's behavioral health crisis, that can be triggering. That can escalate rather than de-escalate for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so, we are expanding that continuum of response so that we can send the best response possible to the situation to meet the person's needs.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. You know, we have tried to, we redefined policing 100 times in this country. And the uniform means something different to different people. And for most people, unfortunately, it doesn't mean service. It means that my movement will be restricted. It also could mean that someone is going to be taken into custody. And so we have to be well-trained so that we can de-escalate that. And we hear a lot about that. So Sarge, talk to me a little bit about the training. For people at home going, you know, there's times where the police, you know, they do have to show up, but I'm worried, you know, I don't know what the level of training. I saw a video from insert whatever city you want, where the police officer just didn't handle it the way they should have handled it. And we've all seen that, right? And so the question to training, how do you respond to that?
Yeah, I had the chance over the last year now to participate in our pre-service visit that we gave to last year's academy class for the first time. And we do 20 hours of crisis management training as a block. That's 20 hours that's required by the state of Wisconsin. But I feel really good about that training because it's our mental health officers paired with our crisis workers. We're in the room all 3 days, and we're the ones delivering the training. And I think what we can bill ourselves on the department and the community as a whole is over time we really do become the subject matter experts on the probate system, which is the court that handles the 51 cases when we've emergency detained somebody. We also get very knowledgeable about the different resources in the community and navigating what can be really difficult or tricky cases that could involve aspects of criminality but also dangerous behavior, and finding that way to truly put people's health and wellness first and get them those services. And I think in combination with that block, we also have professional communication skills, we have constitutional law, defensive and arrest tactics. I think all of our unified skills really do come together, because I've also seen through the scenarios that we're running scenarios that have overlap, where they're seeing an actor demonstrating signs and symptoms of somebody in a mental health crisis. Yeah. So they're able to recognize that as well.
Yeah, so we've gone from training, and we do those trainings annually, but we also teach as well. What is the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill? NAMI.
Can I pass that one over to you, Sarah?
Sure. So NAMI is a national organization that has state and local chapters. So for, you know, local listeners here, NAMI Dane County is an amazing resource. Their focus is really on training and education for a number of different audiences. So they are a really wonderful resource for people who are living with mental illness, for people who are supporting people who live with mental illness. So a lot of family members receive support from NAMI in the form of, you know, support groups, education, things like that. And NAMI also does a lot of training for law enforcement through their CIT, crisis intervention training, as well as other partners. I've actually participated in many of these trainings, as has several members of our mental health unit. So it could be for dispatchers, paramedics, other types of community providers who serve people who live with mental illness.
Right. I will mention that we did reach out to Assistant Chief Stedman, who commands the CARES group. He had a conflict. He did want to be here, but he couldn't be here. So we definitely want to wish him well. Any plans to expand CARES? I hear that a lot. I know that there was at least one additional expansion of CARES. But any plans for it to be 24/7?
Yeah, so again, this is a very, really new program and a relatively new model in most communities. There are some really well-established programs such as the CAHOOTS program in Eugene, Oregon, that have been studied by many different communities. But we decided to start really small. We wanted our expansion and our decisions to be driven by data. So we started with data from the Madison Police Department about when and where the highest call volume for mental health related crises occurred. So when we first started, we were just in operation from 11 to 7 Monday through Friday in the Central District. And by the end of, I think it was within 4 months, we had expanded to citywide because we recognized we had the capacity to serve more people. Fast forward to now, we've doubled the size of the team. We're working 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday. And our next expansion that will hopefully happen within the next couple of months is into weekend hours. And we anticipate beyond that, we'll start to get into later evening hours and things like that. So I would not want to try to predict what this will, how or when this will proceed, this expansion long term. But I think the kind of pie in the sky goal would be to have it countywide 24/7. It's really challenging to staff 24/7 programs. The behavioral health field is really competitive right now in terms of hiring and training really, you know, good quality staff. So I think we're a long way off from that, but that is the kind of ideal goal.
Yeah, when you say competitive, are you saying that you're having a hard time finding applicants?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
I thought it would be the other way around. I hear a lot of talk about, you know, people going into social work and mental health, but we need more people.
I think there's been, I mean, what I've observed is that particularly with COVID, we had a lot of kind of institutional knowledge exit the field with people who, you know, decided they were ready to, or at least this is what I observed in our program, and I'm sure others as well. And yeah, it's just, I think, you know, you hear stories in the news all the time about how the labor shortage and how hard it is for people to hire. And I really see this very much in behavioral health across multiple agencies that people are really having a hard time hiring. And one of the outcomes of that is that some of the folks that we hire might be a little less experienced and need more time to train, which we will absolutely do. But, you know, that certainly impedes our ability to maybe expand our services at the rate that we might like to.
Absolutely. So I want to switch gears maybe just a little bit and talk about substance abuse. Is there a difference between someone who is experiencing a behavior that's related to mental illness and someone who's displaying a behavior that's related to substance abuse? And how do we draw the distinction? Is it the same? Do we give them the same treatment? Do we treat them the same way?
Yeah, I can sort of answer that question. I think from the officer standpoint, when we are going to an active call and we're assessing what is at play, our officers are trained to recognize what might be signs and symptoms of mental illness. We certainly aren't mental health professionals where we're going to be diagnosing people in the field. And so sometimes it's uncertain exactly what is going on with somebody. They might be displaying some signs and symptoms that could also be a result of being impaired by a drug.
Right.
But whatever the case is, we're going to first make that scene safe. We're going to try to slow things down. We're going to investigate, talk to as many people that might be witnesses to what occurred, talk to the person themselves, and then try to come to that informed decision about what to do next. And I know that officers do call Journey and consult and say, this is what I'm seeing. And sometimes they're able to tell us, oh yeah, we know this person and we know that they might be suffering from mental illness, but also living with some sort of dependency on drugs or substance. So with some of that context, we can get people to the hospital when that's appropriate. I think when there are substances on board in combination with mental illness, and it may impede the ability for us to get somebody formally assessed as part of the emergency detention process. And I don't know, Sarah, if you have more to speak to on that.
Sure. And I did want to just make one kind of clarifying point. When police call Journey, I wouldn't want any audience member to walk away with the impression that police officers call us and we just openly share, you know, information about our history with patients or things like that. When a patient is in an unsafe situation that is resulting in a police response, we will share information on a need-to-know basis to ensure the safety of that person and get them the care that they need. And that enables us to work together to divert people from the criminal justice system when we recognize that there's mental illness and or substance use at play. But I think your question is a good one, Chief, in that, you know, substance use disorders are mental health disorders. And, you know, we see so many people with co-occurring disorders. And this looks a lot of different ways, like somebody who is experiencing acute depression and kind of self-medicating with substances, or somebody who experiences addiction to drugs that cause psychotic symptoms or causes them to appear manic. And unfortunately, while we see that these issues are very tightly wound together, our systems for responding to these illnesses and treating people are kind of siloed and not as well integrated as they should be. And one of the issues, you know, particularly for us as emergency responders that we encounter, as Sergeant Prado alluded to, is that you know, the presence of substances may impact how we can respond to a person in crisis. A person is not going to get admitted to a psychiatric facility when they are intoxicated. Right. They will be taken to detox or an emergency room until they're sobered up enough to receive a psych assessment and determine what level of care is needed at that point. So there are things like that that really cause this kind of fracturing of how we respond to these issues, even though they're so, you know, really tightly intertwined.
Yeah, and a big part of that is the system. You mentioned what the police do, what carers may do, what will happen. You talked about making sure that they are, number one, healthy before we can do anything else, making sure that they are not under the influence. Where does the system need to grow? I know it's a tough one. We won't call names. Where does the system need to grow?
I think from my standpoint, both from inpatient and outpatient services offered, community-based services, things that when somebody is recognizing that this is a cycle that they've been through before and they might be ramping up due to a condition that they have, that they have somebody that they know they can reach out to regardless of insurance, regardless of what they think or know that they are eligible for, where there is, in those circumstances, people have that lifeline and family members have that lifeline for their loved ones when they're experiencing it. 'Cause I think the way I look at 911 calls, a lot of them are crises. Somebody has a situation that has surpassed their ability to handle it, to cope with, and then we get called. And when we show up, we don't always take some sort of action, transport people away from where they are. Sometimes we just walk away. But in the meantime, we really do try to connect them, give them some resolution. And I think those are services that we don't necessarily have to offer from the bigger picture. Right. These are things, if we just had more people working in the field, that they could be doing.
You kind of alluded to exactly what I would say, which is that I know the Madison area has a reputation outside of Dane County as being really rich in resources, and we are, to the extent that we have really great programs and services, innovative things like the CARES team that other communities don't have. But I think it's more a problem of quantity for us that we just don't have enough services to match the needs of the community. And there are a number of things that impact that, including, you know, the challenges with staffing. But the other thing I just wanted to mention is that, you know, one resource, and there is a lot of kind of, you know, I'm looking for resources, but is this the right door? Is this the right door? I don't know where to get the help that I need. Sometimes people just don't even know where to start, and that's what causes them to call 911, whether it's for themselves or someone else. And another option for people is to call the crisis unit. At Journey Mental Health, we have a 24-hour crisis line. It's been around for over four decades, staffed 24/7 to help people who are in a crisis, who need some support in the moment, who need direction to connect to appropriate resources. So this is something that can be used by anybody. And we may triage those calls and direct them towards other resources instead of providing direct service, but we're here for people in the community anytime.
Yeah, I agree with that. For me, you know, I would love to see mental health and drug courts in America specifically. I come from a jurisdiction that had mental health courts and substance abuse courts. So even though you may have committed a crime, and we criminalize a lot in this country, you would go before a judge who would take into account your mental health ability and also your drug use. And there were services that were provided to people to help them cope with what they were going through, and then they dealt with the other at another time. But no, this has been great. I'm going to let you have some final thoughts. So from the lens of our community members who are listening, going, man, this is great. I really did not realize, you know, that the police department are well trained. They have mental health officers who do follow up, who come out on calls. They partner with Journey. They support the CARES, which we do. We do support the CARES program and its expansion. What's your message, Sergeant Prado, as the sergeant of the mental health unit? You command that unit. Those are the folks that work for you, and they do a great job What's your message for our community?
Yeah, I think as a final thought, I see a lot of amazing work that our patrol officers that are doing, that our voluntary mental health liaisons are doing on a daily basis, that our mental health officers are doing on a daily basis. And I think just as important as them being as empathetic and caring as they are towards other people in the community, they also need to take care of themselves. And I think our wellness is inextricably linked to the wellness of the people in our community. That would be my final message if people hadn't thought about that recently, is that our wellness is inextricably linked.
I like that. I like that. Sarah, final thoughts? Anything?
It feels so challenging to come up with something profound in the final seconds, I guess. I don't know. As a person with a background in social work, my takeaway message is going to be something along the lines of just reminding people that there is help out there, that there are people who care, that reaching out for help doesn't have to be a scary or intimidating experience, and that we have a lot of people who really want to help and support you.
Absolutely. And I guess my final thought to sum this all up is the Madison Police Department cares deeply about our community. And we know that we don't always have all the answers, but as you can see, for years we've partnered with those who are experts, like Sarah, who's sitting to my immediate right, and the people at Journey Mental Health. Thank you so much, Sarah, for being willing to add your expertise to make us a better police department, a better service provider for our community. I think it's very, very important to us. You know, I get this question a lot about mental health, and it's good that I can have an answer that I agree with, and that is partnering with the people who are the experts to guide us in how to better serve our community. And Sergeant Prado, thank you so much for willing to step up and take on the role of being a sergeant of our mental health unit. I want to thank you and all the officers, of course, with the Madison Police Department, specifically your group that's out there working, doing the work. I've been on ride-alongs and seen them come out, and they know the people that they're dealing with, and I appreciate that in their relationships. So thank you so much for our special guests. Again, this is Bridging the Gap. I'm your host, Chief Barnes, and thanks for joining us.